All right, great to have everyone back with us. We got baseball coming up. Pat, this is one segment that I always enjoy doing. We're going to go back east and go to Howard Bryan of ESPN. Howard, how are you today?
Hey, Marty, how you doing?
We're doing great. We're looking forward to having you on. We talked a little bit about some of the things going on in Boston. First thing I want to ask you, how are the Red Sox doing? They're in another big series with the Yankees. Seems like they play every day. Chapman gave it up again last night. Sale today. What's going on with the Red Sox-Yankees?
Well, this is that time that we always talk about, separation time, when you start to find out which teams are built for 162 and which teams, quite frankly, really aren't. And right now it looks like the Yankees aren't built for it, and the Red Sox are starting to run away with this division.
Yeah, they are. And what about Chapman, though?
I guess he got removed from the closer role. Steve Fishman back at the studio just informed me he saw that information. So that's
what
a downfall.
You can see that coming. Yeah, you can see that coming. And I think that we've been laughing in our own way, not really laughing, but sort of watching this for the past year about what kind of year Chapman was going to have after that World Series, and whether or not Joe Maddon ended the guy's career or his effectiveness after the way they pitched him the last few games in that series. And obviously the velocity is still there for the most part, but it's not there as consistently as it was. So I wonder about the long-term future of Aroldis Chapman.
Yeah, we're going to see. But the Red Sox are starting to get a grip on that American League East. Howard, Pablo Sandoval is back here. He wrote on the Players Tribune. He never fit in Boston, and Nick Cafardo had fun with that. He said he never fit into his uniform in Boston. What was the reaction to Sandoval and his comments?
The reaction was awful, as you would expect, especially in Boston. Considering he didn't perform, Dave Dombrowski let him have it. Everybody let him have it, somewhat in a sort of paternalistic way as well. That hey, you know, we gave you a chance to make it here, and you just didn't. I got the feeling from reading his comments that I didn't think that he wanted anybody's sympathy. From what I read, it just didn't work, and I think that he was trying to explain that it didn't work. And that he didn't play well. I don't think he blamed anybody. Maybe his heart wasn't in it, whatever the reason was. But I think that when he came to Boston, the expectations were for him to be a better player than he was. And he really never delivered on what that promise was. And I think he's where he wants to be now. Boy, we see that happen all the time with free agents as well. It doesn't always work.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he needed a comfort zone, and he got one here. And now we'll see what he can do.
Well, I mean, Marty, I think one of the things to remember about the entire free agent thing, it's a lot of fun, and we do this when we're all looking for jobs and everything else. It's really fun to be attractive. It's fun to be wooed. It's fun to be wanted. But when you're going to be a free agent, the expectation is that you are going to be the face of the franchise. You are going to win games. You are going to be the guy. And not everybody's personality is built for that, and I don't think anybody realizes that as much until they sign. Then they go, oh, I wasn't built for this.
Yeah, especially in a city that requires it and is a microscope kind of city.
Well, if for nothing else,
especially
you show
there.
Up in shape. I mean, I don't think that's a strange request from a fan base, especially one where a guy's making 95. Hey, Howard, you're such a successful author and journalist and such a renowned journalist. What do you think just of the tone of the Players Tribune article, and what are your overall thoughts when they have ghostwriters doing stuff for players? What are your thoughts just on the Players Tribune itself?
Well, I don't, look at it as anything more than the players sort of having a forum for them to say what they want to say. Mm-hmm. I don't look at it as real journalism anyway.
Yeah.
To be honest, I look at it as the players sort of doing their first person thing. I don't know if those first person themes are accurate to how the player feels. The player is obviously not writing it anyway.
Right.
So, this is sort of a having it both ways thing that the players seem to think is effective for them, but in some ways it blows up in their face. And by the way, I don't think it's a big request to come in shape with when someone's going to pay you that kind of money. But the bottom line with him was that I don't think there was anybody when he signed that deal in Boston, or at least anyone that knew anything about him or watched him, that thought he was going to suddenly you know, turn into the next Rico Petrocelli. That wasn't going to happen.
For those who don't remember, Rico was a shortstop who hit him over that wall pretty easily, okay. And the great Rico Petrocelli.
Nice.
Howard, he moved to third base, too, Marty. Come on, you know that. He moved to third base later after Burleson was there.
They had to move him over, but Rico owned the wall. He could pepper the wall very nicely. Howard Bryant with us, ESPN. We love him. Howard, a lot going on in Boston today. You can bring us up to date on some of your thoughts about that. But as I like to say, and I said it before you came on, if you look at the history of America, it always shows up through the baseball field or something that goes on in baseball. Things are happening in Boston. John Henry spoke out this week about removing the name of Yawkey Way because of the background of Tom Yawkey, who ended up getting the Red Sox, as you know, in 1933, had him through 76, very philanthropic, but was an avowed racist and was the last organization, the last franchise to integrate baseball with Pumpsy Green in 59. So now, with everything that's going on in the country this week and certainly around this country, the Red Sox are taking a position. How do you feel about it, and what's the story back in Boston?
Well, I'm conflicted about a lot of it. I mean, I'm always conflicted about scrubbing history and messing around with history, because let's not make it seem that Tom Yawkey never existed, because his name is all over the city of Boston, whether you're looking at the subway stops, whether you're looking at the children's hospital, whether you're looking at the emergency room over at, I think, Beth Israel Hospital. I think that you can't just suddenly say that he's not there. I mean, it's a towering presence when you think about the Jackie Robinson Museum in New York. I mean, they gave $3 million to get that thing off the ground. I am conflicted about it as well, because the history speaks for itself, and you can't escape the question of racism when you mention Tom Yawkey's name, so therefore the Red Sox can't escape it. At the same time, I wish that they had handled this a little bit differently. I think that maybe they could have done this quietly, and they didn't have to announce it. Just do it. Go to the city council and have them put it on the budget for the next city council meeting, because now it's a story, and I think that may be more problematic than just taking the steps to have this thing in motion.
Howard, I've never been to New England, and I'm very curious as to why New England. You know, typically these images and issues of racism are considered in the South, but why in Boston and why in New England do they have such a reputation, and is it deserved of racism and these kinds of issues?
Well, these issues are not just for the South. It's in the whole country, no matter where you go. I mean, you can find Confederate flags in California. You can go anywhere and find that stuff. Like, I would imagine that it's something that the entire country had to deal with. But in terms of Boston, the reason why it is what it is from a historical standpoint is that Boston in the revolutionary times in the 1600s, 1700s was a beacon for African Americans. It was the first place to integrate public schools. It was, Harvard was integrated. It was one of the first places where African Americans actually could live, for them, a relatively middle-class life. And then by the mid-20th century, it turned. So it was very stark in Boston. From a baseball standpoint, obviously, as we all know, the Red Sox could have been the first team to integrate, and instead became the last team to integrate. And it wasn't just that. It was not only did the Red Sox integrate 12 years after baseball integrated, but they also signed their first free agent 16 years after 1976. Their first free agent was Billy Hatcher and Andre Dawson in 1992. So you've got a history there where the organization never really made it comfortable for African Americans to either play there or to attend games as fans. It's a long-going thing.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of ethnic divisiveness in the Boston area, and that's been part of it.
You know, the East Coast, Marty, it's like that in every damn neighborhood here. I mean, that's the thing. But the reason why Boston is the way it is because the other cities have gotten past it. When I say get past it from a team standpoint, you don't have the same. You don't have players, black players saying they don't want to play for the Orioles or they don't want to play for the Yankees or they don't want to play for the Phillies anymore. You don't have that, but you still have it in Boston. That's the difference, is that even today, you still have the Adam Jones situation that you had up at Fenway earlier this year. With Boston, it's a lingering thing. That's the problem.
Well, I hope that, you know, as a symbol of what could be right, I hope that they do take the name down. It doesn't change that he gave $500 million and the foundation, you know, supported so many things, as you pointed out. But maybe as a symbol of not honoring someone and maybe of trying to take a step forward, I hope they do change it. So I know it's a sensitive subject, but I that's where I stand on it.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that from the standpoint of starting a new history, I think legacy is very important. And if you're John Henry, if you're the Henry Group that bought it from the Yawkey Fund, the Yawkey Trust in 2002, for the most part, it's been mission accomplished in Boston. You promised a championship, and you've delivered three of them. You've created an environment where Pedro Martinez and David Ortiz are the two faces of the franchise over the last 15 years, and the one thing that lingers is this. Fenway Park is a cash cow in terms of, you know, they do tours in December. People come in to look at that ballpark, so that thing's always making money. So the one thing that lingers with the Red Sox is this, is the Yawkey name, is the Yawkey legacy of racism in with the ballpark, with the radio station, with WEEI and all of it. So that one part of it is a huge part of it, and maybe this is the first step to eradicating that too.
Hey, Howard, one more question for you from me, at least on Giancarlo Stanton's explosive comments this week. He doesn't want to consider Babe Ruth's number of 60 home runs in a season, and then he doesn't want to acknowledge anything above 61. I'm looking at you, Barry Bonds, and I remember reading your excellent book, Juicing the Game, in 2005. So I'd like to get your thoughts on Babe Ruth and whether or not his numbers should be acknowledged, and then obviously the steroid era's numbers.
Well, I sort of think that, for the most part, you know, everybody knows how I feel about the legitimacy of the numbers. I think baseball has damaged the game. I think they did something very damaging to it, to the sport. I think they did something very damaging to the Hall of Fame. I think the players have done something very damaging to themselves. I think everybody failed on this, and I've said this many, many times. At the same time, the numbers are the numbers. When we were kids, you knew that it was Henry, Babe, Willie, and Frank, and now it's going to be difficult to figure out if you can name the top 10 home run guys the way we used to, and that's the price that baseball and that the fans and everybody else has to pay. But the numbers are the numbers. And whether or not you want to say what Josh Gibson could have done or what Satchel Paige could have done, I look at it this way, that it's a historical continuum, and all of these chapters build on each other, and after Giancarlo Stanton is gone, there'll be a chapter that lives on after him.
Yeah.
So, to me, I feel like it's an interesting conversation, but Barry Bonds leads Major League Baseball history in home runs. He's the guy right now.
No, I leave it at that. I do. I mean, and if you want to argue, well, Maris had 61 and Stanton's got 63, and who knows, there's no taint to it, and you want to take...
One was a 154-game season, and one was a 152-game season, and one game wasn't integrated, and one game had steroids in it. And so I think the most important thing you can do is sort of acknowledge the time periods while you're assessing the time period.
Right. No, I agree. Very good. Boy, Howard, it's great to have you on, as always. How would you like to be followed on Twitter? You have a couple of different handles. I think you're fabulous.
No, I don't, Marty. I have one handle. It's HBryant42.
That's it? All right.
That's all.
All right. HBryant. Well, I love following you, and you did a great job today explaining what was going on in Boston as well.
There is a Howard Bryant, however. There is a Howard Bryant that you can follow. He's an English citizen, and on his Twitter handle it says, not the American sports writer. But you can hang out with him if you want.
All right, HB Bryant. Yeah. But I love having you on, and a great perspective on everything. And take care of yourself. We'd love to have you again.
Thanks, Howard.
All right, Marty. See you.
Very good. Always love. He's the best.
Sharp dude. You know, I've resented ESPN ever since they canceled the sports reporters, Marty. I don't get my Howard Bryan. I don't get my Mike Lupica. I don't get my Mitch Albom. I don't get those guys on a Sunday morning. It's not the same.
No. Howard is, of course, we knew him out here.
Yeah, he covered the A's.
Beat writer out here. African-American.
Yeah.
Is very much in touch with so many of the issues, but he's so he's just in touch with it, and I have all the most respect for him in his opinions and what they're based on.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, so you can still read him in the magazine and ESPN.com. And something that you may not know about Howard if you don't follow him on Twitter, big tennis fan.
I mean, he's a ridiculous tennis fan.
Is tennis a cult sport, Marty?
Not as much as golf. No, tennis, more people play tennis, I think, you know, like men and women and kids and all that. But, you know, golf is a cult. There's no question.
If Brian Murphy's driving down the road right now, he knows what I'm doing.
It is. Name me, give me 10 tennis players and 10 golfers. I bet you could do the tennis players first.
All right.
But whatever. But that's another story.
A great hit from Howard. I appreciated that. That was good.
Yeah, very good.